You are Locked On Raptors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, how's it going? Welcome to episode number 432 of Locked On Raptors for Friday, December 7th. I am your host, Sean Woodley of RaptorsHQ.com. You can find me on Twitter, as always, at WoodleySean. Find the show at Locked On Raptors. You can find links to every single episode. And, of course, make sure you're checking out the Locked On Podcast Network, team-focused shows for all 30 NBA teams. We got 32 NFL shows as well. We've got Locked On Fantasy Basketball. We've got two Locked On Fantasy Football shows. We've got Locked On NBA with weekly contributions from Ben Golliver and Sam Amick over there. We've got Locked On NFL as well, daily with Matt Williamson hosting that. Tons of stuff going on in the network, so make sure you are finding a show that you like, and if you find one that you appreciate, you find a host you want to support, make sure you go to the given iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, anything that hosts that podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review. It's the best way to support the shows, and makes us feel very good. It puts us up in the rankings and makes us more visible and helps us collect more listeners, and that's what we all want at the end of the day. So thank you very much if you've done it already. If you haven't yet, on the Locked On Raptors page, please consider doing it. Again, it takes no time at all. It can be your Christmas gift to me, and I will very much appreciate it, and it costs no money, which is the best kind of gift to give. All right, on today's show, it's been a sentimental day on Raptors Internet. I think kind of inspired by Eric Kareen's fantastic feature for The Athletic. But this, just so people know, this podcast was planned before Eric Kareen wrote about the five-year anniversary of the Rudy Gay trade. We are not piggybacking off of Eric's idea. This was planned, but it's nice that it happened, and it kind of makes more people more kind of in the mode to reflect on the five-year anniversary of the Rudy Gay trade, which is on December 8th, which is Saturday. And joining me today to kind of reflect on the last 5 years and just kind of go through some big picture stuff, highs, lows, whatever we really are going to get to here. It's going to be a wide-ranging podcast, probably a longer one. Joining me for this is our pal, Joe Wolfond from The Score. How's it going, buddy?
It's going great, man. I'm delighted to be on this episode. Really looking forward to it.
Yeah, this should be a good one. It's going to be a good one. There's a refrain from the last 5 years. that commercial will still be running 10 years from now when Bruno Caboclo is...
You need the narrator voice to come in. It was not a good one.
Hey, that's a G League Finals MVP you're talking about right there. Or was that Pascal? I can't remember.
It was Pascal.
Yeah. Well, he had a nice game. He had 31 in the clinching game, which I recall very vividly. That happened during a playoff game, didn't it? Like a Raptors playoff game, if I'm not mistaken?
It happened during Game 6 against the Bucks.
That's right.
Which is just wild.
Yeah. So that just an uproarious day for Raptors fans. We'll get to that game, I'm sure, and a lot of other stuff in this podcast. But I guess where we should start is the logical point. The Rudy Gay trade itself, December 8th, 2013. I guess the logical question to begin with is, where were you? Do you remember it vividly? Or did you just kind of pass in the night without you really paying much attention to it?
I was in Arizona, weirdly enough.
Okay.
My grandparents were living there, so I was visiting them. And I had gone, like, not with any other family members, just by myself. So... It broke shortly before that Lakers game, I think.
Yeah.
And so I think my grandparents were like settling in to go to bed. It was like, 6 o'clock or something. and I was just like by myself, found like an illegal stream of that Lakers game. Mm-hmm. It was just like a bit of a whirlwind, I guess, when it went down, and it definitely seemed like it was going to be the start of an earnest tank job.
Mm-hmm.
That was going to land us Andrew Wiggins. So there was a weird sort of excitement about it. Like I had been engaging shamefully or shamelessly, I don't really know, but in some fan tanking during the early part of that season.
Mm-hmm.
Because it did seem like the team was going nowhere, and I did really want them to get Wiggins.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd kind of been rooting for them to lose games. And I guess, I don't know. I don't really remember what my reaction was, but I do very vividly remember watching that Lakers game, the Amir Johnson show.
Yes. Yeah, Amir Johnson.
And
that game
was also Kobe's first game back from from his Achilles injury. So.
Yeah, that Amir Johnson game. We had 30 points and like 12 rebounds or something like that. I'm pulling up the box score here, but.
I think he was 32 and 10.
That's insane.
And he had 21 in the first half. I want to say.
Yeah. The Raptors win that game 106-94. They move to 7-12 on the year. And, like, I don't know. I wasn't expecting that to be, like, the beginning of a great run by any means. I was like, hey, that was a fun win. They laid eight guys. They spoiled Kobe Bryant's return. That's always good. That was also the game where Jack Armstrong and Matt Devlin had, like, the extended rant about the Kardashians and trying to figure out which Kardashian was in attendance. That was a really
good
one.
Of course you would remember that aspect of the game.
And, yeah, Amir Johnson in that game. 36 minutes played. He started, obviously. 14 of 17 from the field, 32 points, 10 boards, a plus 22, 2 steals, 2 blocks, an assist. Very, very good. Also, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan kind of hinting at things to come as well. Kyle at 23 with 8 assists, 5 rebounds, and 3 steals, and 8 of 13. And DeMar at 8 of 19, which was kind of good for him at that point. 26 points, 5 assists, 3 steals, 5 boards, also a plus 22. The other three guys off the bench were, I guess the other starters were Landry Fields, who started in place of Rudy Gay. He went 0 of 6 in 31 minutes. Very Landry Fields of him to do so. Jonas started as well. He only had 5 points in 28 minutes. And then off the bench, Terrence Ross, Steve Novak, and Julian Stone. Sure, man.
What a squad.
Yeah. I think it speaks ill of Dwight Bikes, DJ Augustine, and Austin Day that they were on the roster and dressed but did not play in this game.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Also a harbinger of things to come for Kobe. Like, had been so excited about his return because the last time he played, he was still an elite player. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, 9 points and 8 turnovers in that game. And then I think he only played a handful of games that year because he ended up with that kneecap injury.
Yeah.
And then was obviously never the same again after that.
So delicious. I don't really revel in people getting injured, but Kobe, nah, I don't really care. Not a great guy. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Kobe. We're here to talk about what happened after that Rudy Gay trade. So the rest of that season we've kind of covered extensively. Actually, in the last Patreon podcast with Josh Howe, we talked about Game 7 of the Raptors-Nets series in depth. I don't know. Take me through your sort of ingestion of that season and sort of how that, you know, went down for you. Because for me, it was an interesting kind of thing. So I had kind of fallen out of the Raptors for a long time before the first Rudy Gay trade where they acquired him and then they got him, and I was like, hell yeah, he's Rudy Gay, he's great, he's who they should have taken instead of Bargs, and I was psyched about it. And I watched a bunch of games and they went like 18 and 18 to finish the season, got the ninth seed, and I was like, yeah, I'm in on the Raptors now. And I guess at the start of the next year I was kind of like floating in and out of interest, and then the trade happens and I just like, I was living on my own at the time. I didn't live with my roommates who were only caring about hockey and like dominating the TV all the time, and I was just like kind of getting into every single game and watching them all unfold and seeing the team kind of go from this like lifeless 6-12 blob into this like team that was just super fun and exciting and was never down. I didn't think We the Fourth started during this season where they would make all these fourth quarter comebacks. It was a really fun season. Do you remember sort of how you took it all in?
I just remember it being so novel. Yeah. You know, even though obviously I had witnessed the Raptors being a playoff team before, it had been so long and they were, it just seemed so clear that they were not moving in that direction.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the start of the season, it was like the measure of what was going to be a successful campaign was whether they finished with like a, you know, a top three draft pick basically. Mm-hmm. And so to suddenly have this turnaround was just like so surprising. And yeah, it was really hard not to get swept up in it. And that was the first season when they had the We the North campaign. And
yeah, they had to bust it out early.
I don't remember like when it came in, but
they dropped the first commercial with Drake narrating it during game one of the playoffs because it was supposed to come a year later when they rebranded, but they were like, oh shit, we gotta get this out now, people care, let's do it.
I feel like, was that also when Drake had the lint roller, or was that the next year?
Yeah, he had the lint roller I think in game two against Brooklyn, if I'm not mistaken. They handed those
but just
out.
Like a couple things that I remember specifically. So obviously like after that Lakers game, they go on that road trip and they have that overtime win against the Mavs.
Yeah.
And then they beat the Thunder after that, and that like it's starting to feel a little bit real. And the one that I really remember is New Year's Day, they beat the Pacers, which was a really big deal at the time because the Pacers were, that was before they started to fall apart.
That was like right around the beginning of their insane collapse, right?
Yeah, well, no, it was still before then. Like the Pacers were 25-5 at that point.
Jesus.
They were like, they were playing like the best team in the league, and that game got the Raptors to 500. They beat them on New Year's Day, and it was like, holy crap, like they're actually good. I think that was the moment I actually started to believe it. And yeah, from that point on, they were just a really good team. And there were a bunch of fun games, like, the, you know, Patterson hit that game winner at the buzzer to beat the Nets. Mm-hmm. Terrence Ross has his 51-point game. A lot of fun games. That overtime game against the Thunder that obviously ended in heartbreak, but it was just like an incredibly fun game. Durant, you know, hits that three at the buzzer to over Amir after Lowry had tied it with a three in regulation. It all kind of builds toward this wrenching series against the Nets. And I just remember feeling like, as heartbreaking as that loss was, it just felt like it was going to be okay, because it felt like it was the start of something and not the end.
Yeah, I'm with you. So, yeah. I couldn't feel sad about that loss. I like, in the moment, obviously, because of just how it happened and just sort of the unlikely turn of events that led to that. They were down like 10 with like 3 minutes left in that game, and and obviously had the chance to win it at the end. So like, just like that unlikely turn of events, and just like the heartbreaking, and also having it be fucking Paul Pierce who had the block at the end. It's like, yeah, it's heartbreaking for a second, but then with a couple days to sort of marinate on it, you're like, oh well, damn, like this was just like a wonderfully good season. They weren't really supposed to win that series anyway. The fact that they got seven was nice, and
I don't actually agree with that.
No, I feel like no. The talk going in was like, oh, they're just gonna lose to like the veteran ass Nets.
I think that was a take that some people had, but I certainly expected them to win. Like, the Nets were bad that year. They had a negative point differential. Like, they were old as hell. They were not good. So yeah, I don't quite agree that they weren't supposed to win. Like, they were definitely the better team, and they probably should have won. They just couldn't stop Joe Johnson, basically. That's really what it came down to. And even, like, you know, they had these random Raptor killers, like Marcus Thornton had like a huge game seven out of the blue. So it was annoying, but I remember that, like, the following day, I was just watching all of the kind of Raptors like exit interviews on locker cleanout day, and they were all just so happy and like glowingly positive. And Grievous Vasquez talking about how, like, you know, God put him there and it was meant to be, and like he'd never been part of a team like that, and it was just it felt good, you know. It was a nice balm after being burned in that game seven. Like, I felt optimistic moving forward.
Yeah, I guess I never really expected the Raptors to win it, just because of maybe like PTSD from past Nets series or whatever. Also, like, this was a thing, actually one of my favorite things of that season was like the random arbitrary endpoint, like, oh, the Raptors are the best team in the league since December 8th or January 1st or whatever. And then by the end of the year, the Nets were kind of getting in those graphics that were being put up on every game as well, because they finished the season pretty strong. I think like Drinkgate with Jason Kidd kind of turned things around for them a little bit, if I recall. That happened that year, right?
Yeah, that did, but that was like way earlier in the season when the team was in dire straits. Like, they started off horribly. I think they were like 10 games under 500.
Yeah, but then they because I think they finished the season so strong, I was like, all right, well, this is not meant to be. They're going to lose this one. And like, the Nets tanked down to play. They, I think they admitted that full on. Like, yeah, we tanked to play not the Wizards. We wanted to play the Raptors instead, which, I mean, the Wizards were actually kind of good that year before everything got real sad with them too. So moving forward to the 2014-15 season, Kyle Lowry resigns, which honestly, I didn't really have that much of a concern about whether or not he was going to resign. Maybe I would sort of remember it differently. I know the Heat were kind of in on it, but for me it was always like, oh, well, Kyle's just coming back. Like, why wouldn't he? He just had the best season of his career, and this team actually like has a future. And the fact that it was like a 4-year, $48 million deal seems like such peanuts now. My God. Like, did you have concern that he wasn't going to come back at all, or were you just like, trusted Masai, he's going to get it done?
I definitely had concern that he wasn't going to come back. I mean, the history at that point was that was how it went, right?
Yeah,
like,
that's
star players did not re-sign.
Yeah.
And I guess the difference was that Lowry had only been a star for, you know, like
6 months
of a season, basically.
Yeah.
So it was different in that sense, but I definitely, you know, I had no idea whether he was or he wasn't going to. Do you remember how he announced it?
How did he announce it? Did he tweet it out or something?
It was an Instagram photo of him wearing the, like, the throwback purple jersey. And I think it was, I don't remember if it was like his number, if it was like a Vince like 15 throwback.
Right.
But like he's got love handles in that photo, man. It's.
I remember this now. It's all coming back to me. The love handles, ominous for the season that was to come.
I mean, yes and no. Like, I have a lot of mixed feelings about this season, and I know obviously the way that it ended, everybody kind of has a sour taste in their mouth about it, but it's nice to remember just like how that season started, because those first couple of months were incredibly fun.
Oh, they were amazing. Yeah.
Sorry,
go ahead.
I mean, like, Lowry started that season just like on fire.
Yeah.
And, you know, before, whether he got injured or got worn down, whatever happened to him at the end of the year, he was obviously nowhere close to being the same player, but like, he was player of the month in December of that year. And the Raptors, you know, were, I think on New Year's, they were 24-8.
Yeah.
They had the best offense in recorded history at that time. And Lowry was just tearing up the league. And honestly, people were talking about them as being the favorites in the Eastern Conference. Like, I remember hearing Zach Lowe say that on his podcast and just thinking how surreal it felt.
Because this is LeBron's first year with them, right? So, with the Cavs, right? Yeah, they were like
they were
500 halfway through the year.
Yeah. And the Hawks hadn't really, like, put it all together yet.
Mm-hmm.
So the Raptors were, like, clearly the best team in the East for, you know, the first 2 months of that season. And because, you know, it felt like the carryover from those good 2013-14 vibes were, you know, just sort of buoying them to bigger and better things, it like, kind of felt like it was going to be at least somewhat sustainable and real. I didn't necessarily think that they were going to make it out of the East that year, but I definitely thought that, like, we were seeing the birth of a juggernaut, and not that it was going to totally fall apart the way that it did.
Yeah, no, I agree. Those first 2 months might be one of the highest highs I can remember, because for me personally, like, it was my first year back from Ottawa for school, and so I was at home, and I was in the area, and I had money, and I didn't have a job, and I was just like, well, I'm going to go to a bunch of Raptors games, I guess, because what the hell else am I going to do? So I remember going to 3 games early in that season. I went to, I think, there was a game against the Magic where they won 104-100, I believe. And that was a comeback. They were down like 13 going into the fourth. And then that bench unit with Lou Williams, Grievous Vasquez, James Johnson, Tyler Hansbrough, and Patrick Patterson was like tearing it up at that time. And they like spearheaded that comeback in that game. And then I was at the Bucks game on the 21st. Where they won by 42.
Game.
The Bruno game, like, holy shit, dude. I don't know if I've been to a more fun, at least regular season game. And, like, playoff games aren't really fun. They're just, like, stressful and angry. Whereas, like, that game was just, like, unadulterated family fun for the whole, like, for everybody. It was just, like, the entire game was just, like, this sort of, there was just, like, this aura around the players. And Bruno was there. And just, like, the entire arena was just so into it. And at this point, they're like 12-2 or something like that. Like they were just kicking ass. And then I went to the Suns game a couple games later, where it was more of a couple days later. It was like more of a close game. They ended up pulling it out at the end. I think Eric Bledsoe, like as Eric Bledsoe used to do with the Suns, like just completely dropped a bomb on the Raptors. But the Raptors ended up pulling it out, and they were just they felt like they couldn't lose in that early part of the season. And yeah, that continued into December. And like as you said, Kyle was incredible. And then I think it was November 28th against the Mavs, that's when DeMar got hurt, right? I'll always remember this day. I was at an Arkells concert at Danforth Music Hall, and within like 20 minutes of each other, I got a notification that the Blue Jays had traded for Josh Donaldson and DeMar DeRozan had torn his adductor. And I was like, how do I feel right now? This is insane. And then Kyle just carried the team for the next month, and it was totally like, it was like as if DeMar wasn't there. Or it didn't matter that DeMar wasn't there. Obviously, it did because Kyle ended up breaking down. And I don't know, were there games in that little stretch where you kind of remember really standing out?
So not after DeRozan got injured, but I want to just like highlight this 3-game stretch that included that Bruno game, right? So the first game it's against the Grizzlies, who are also just tearing up the league at that time.
And that's the Vince return game, right?
Yeah, so it's the Vince, like, we forgive you game.
Yeah.
and they play, you know, they play the montage, and he's crying, and he's getting a standing ovation. And First of all, like, I think it's clear, you know, what needs to happen in order for those moments of kind of embrace and forgiveness to take place is, like, the team just has to get good again, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was all that really needed to happen. And, like, you see it with Bosch too, right? Like, the last time Bosch was at that game against the Sixers and got a standing ovation for, yeah, I think, the first time in the ACC. So Vince gets a standing ovation. He's crying. And then the Raptors, like, come back and beat the Grizzlies. Lowry ices it with a turnaround fadeaway over Marc Gasol.
And this was the year the Grizzlies were awesome.
Yeah.
They, like, so for a while, they were, like, a final. It was, like, them and the Warriors atop the West.
Yeah, they were killing it at the start of that year. So that was, like, a big measuring stick game and just a great win. The next game after that is that 42-point win over the Bucks when Bruno has his coming out party.
8 points and in the fourth.
The very next day after that is a game in Cleveland, the first time that they've faced, like, the LeBron-led Cavs, mm-hmm, or the second era LeBron-led Cavs. And Lou Williams just absolutely goes off in that game.
Yeah.
And they demolished the Cavs. And I remember, like, I was in Kingston for that weekend, so I watched both the Bucks game and the Cavs game in Kingston that weekend. I was visiting friends, mm-hmm, and I was watching with maybe, like, 8 or 9 other guys the Cleveland game. And it was like, as the Raptors were dribbling it out at the final buzzer, like, we all just sort of spontaneously got up onto our feet and, like, burst into rapturous applause, like the way that the fans of the game would. And it went on, honestly, for like a full 2 minutes. Like, we were just standing there cheering. And I just remember feeling, like, really excited and actually thinking that the team was for real. And I kind of couldn't believe it. Like, it had never felt that way before.
Yeah, that game was crazy. That was the only win of the Raptors, or sorry, the second Cleveland LeBron era for the Raptors in Cleveland, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that's right.
Came real early. Yeah, Lou Williams came up. They actually started that game off. I think they were down almost 20, and then they started to pull back at the end of the first quarter, and then for the rest of it, they just kind of ran with it. Yeah, Lou in that game, 30 minutes played, 36 points, 4 rebounds, 3 steals, 1 assist, 9 of 19, and then 15 of 15 from the line.
Yeah. So another thing I remember from that, so Will Cherry was on that Cavs team. And
yeah.
He, like, actually got burned and was, like, guarding Lou Williams for large parts of that game. And Lou was, like, getting an interview after the game was over. And I can't remember who was interviewing him, but they asked, like, what did you see that kind of, like, got you going? And whoever it was, I want to say it was, like, Pat Patterson, who was, or maybe it was even DeMar, who was, like, walking by, and they heard that question. So the question is, like, what did you see that got you going? And the person who was walking by just yelled, "Will Cherry." Anyway, yeah, that was a great game.
Yeah, that was awesome. And then the run continues through December, and then it's right around sort of Christmas where things get a little bit dicey. I think this is kind of late in DeMar's 21-game absence. They go on this Western road trip right around, I think it's like wrapped around Christmas, actually, if I'm not mistaken. They go out to the Chicago on the 22nd, and then they go to play the Clippers, Nuggets, Blazers, Warriors, and Suns on a road trip. And that Blazers game was probably, like, the most entertaining game of the season. It was insane. They went to OT. They lost by 5. And then after that, things kind of spiraled a little bit. They played the Warriors. They lost that one in Golden State by 21. And then they lost to the Suns. And then they came back home. And I think that Charlotte game on January 8th is DeMar's first game back. But they never really kind of got back rolling for the rest of the season. Like, they were kind of just, like, middling the entire year beyond after that, whether it was just, like, working DeMar back in or Kyle just being kind of worn down. They had one more 6-game winning streak, but other than that, like, they were pretty rough, and they had, like, a 9-10 stretch where they lost 9 of 10, and it was just, it kind of got a little bit somber a little bit, because you're looking ahead to the playoffs and they're sliding down the standings and they're not, you know, projected to win 50 plus anymore, and it's like, oh, this is kind of a bummer season. Do you remember sort of how you reconciled that sort of second half of the year?
I was not in a good place. Like, the enthusiasm really fizzled just so quickly. And it wasn't even just that they were losing, but it was watching Lowry slowly break down.
Yeah.
I mean, that was really it, right? And he just became a shell of himself.
He missed a ton of games,
too. It was really sad
too.
To watch.
Yeah.
And there was really, like, after they had one game that I remember, like, after the All-Star break, they started to kind of, like, put it back together. Mm-hmm. And they played the Hawks in the first game after the All-Star break and just smacked them.
Yeah.
Beat them by, like, 30 points. And the Hawks were, like, the best team in the East at that time. So that made you think that maybe they were, like, ready to go on a second half run.
And they were fresh off having an entire lineup named Player of the Month.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, and then they promptly lost 9 of 10, and there was not, like, a single good moment, I don't think, the rest of that season, aside from the Grievous Vasquez shimmy in Game 1 against the Wizards, and the Randy Whitman clipboard moment that immediately followed.
Hell yeah. So there are two moments in this part of the, like, in the second half of the season in playoffs that I would sort of rank as the two lowest points, or two of, like, the three or four lowest points I can sort of recall me feeling, at least, during the post-Gay era. One is February 28th. They play the Knicks. It's their fifth loss in a row. And DeMar DeRozan missing the 360 dunk.
Oh, man.
Oh, my, nothing can go right. This is terrible. And so they lost that game, 103-98, to, like, a really shitty Knicks team. And then was that 14-15 Knicks team, like, a sub 20 win team, if I recall correctly? Like, they were awful.
Yeah, 17 wins.
Yeah, like, this is the team with, like, Travis Ware and, like, Ricky Lido and, oh my God, just a very, very gross. Alexei Shved was playing a bunch. I remember this team now. What a disaster. Sam Dalembert, Bargs, obviously. And then I guess the second lowest moment, and this is probably, like, the lowest moment I can recall, because of my own personal biases, and then also just the tenor of the arena after it happened. Game 2, Raptors Wizards. I was in attendance for this one. I spent like $150 on tickets to go to this game to sit like the last row of the 300s. And just from the start to finish. So by the end of the year, I was very tired of the Lou Williams experience. Like, I was not a fan. One of my first blogs I ever wrote was about, like, Lou taking shots at the end of quarters and how it was terrible and how much I hated it. And I was just very, very tired of that whole experience. And then this was the game where he got honored with Sixth Man of the Year before the game, just to kind of rub salt in my wound. And then this was also the game where James Johnson came in, and I was also an unabashed James Johnson hater at this time, and just, like, didn't understand the, like just the constant rage that people had that he wasn't playing, and just, like, the Fire Casey sentiment that was coming pretty much exclusively from the James Johnson hive at this point. And I remember he got, like, a standing O when he got subbed into this game at one point. And his very first possession on defense, Paul Pierce hits a three in his eye. And I was just like, yeah, this is, like, what the fuck I've been talking about. Like, this is not saving anything. This team is broken right now, and James Johnson ain't fixing it. And so just being in attendance for that, the last home game of that season, and you knew it was going to be the last home game too, man. I might have tried to, like, be the positive Sean and be like, oh, no, it's not over yet. They have a chance. But, like, we all fucking knew, man. It was not going to end well, and I just that was a real low point for me. It was game 2, just being there. That's $150 I'm never getting back.
Yeah, it was rough. I don't think it gets much lower in the last 5 years than that Wizards series.
Certainly not. Before we move on to talk about happier times, I want to tell everyone about our sponsor for today, and that is Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best battery-heated clothing. Heat on demand at the touch of a button. Control your environment with Action Heat. Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via heating panels similar to those of a heated car seat. They can reach temperatures up to 135 degrees and are powered by rechargeable 5-volt lithium ion batteries that last up to 12 hours on each charge. And Action Heat batteries can also be used to recharge your phone or any other gadget you have while you're wearing them. Perfect for any friend or family on your holiday gift list. Great for anyone who works outdoors, skiers, snowboarders, or anyone that loves the outdoors and hates being cold. Action Heat clothing provides toasty warmth and comfort for your whole body, including heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and even undergarments like heated base layer shirts and long johns. You can stay warm and cozy from head to toe with Action Heat. Action Heat is available in men's and women's and has great new styles and models just released for this winter season. Make winter activities more enjoyable with a blast of warmth. Action Heat is the perfect solution to keep you toasty and warm, even in the most frigid winter weather. Heated products to fit everyone's budget starting at just $39.99. And we've got a special deal for our listeners to save 20% off your entire order. Just go to actionheat.com/lockedon and check out everything Action Heat has to offer. That's actionheat.com/lockedon, or use the coupon code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20% off your order. Stay toasty and warm while you enjoy all your favorite outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat. And thanks to Action Heat for sponsoring the podcast. All right, speaking of Action Heat, so the Raptors ended up winning a series against the Heat in the 2015-16 season, but much happened before we got to that. This was a very good season altogether, right? Is this, like, for you, the peak season in Raptors history at this point, or like even today?
I mean, I think as far as regular seasons go, I would still take last year.
Right.
But if you're looking at it holistically, with playoffs included, yeah, it's got to be. I mean, they make it to the conference finals. They come up incredibly, just two wins short of the finals.
Yeah.
And, you know, because of, like, the way that the previous season had ended, there were these reduced expectations that they just shattered.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember very specifically, like, this was the year that the Blue Jays got insanely good.
Yeah.
And the Jays had basically just lost Game 6 against the Royals, like a couple of days before the Raptors opened their season.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember being like, I can't do this with the Raptors right now. Like, I was still bummed out about the way that Wizards series had gone and, like, that season had ended. And after, like, the high highs of that Jays late summer, I like, just was having a really hard time, like, re-engaging with the Raptors.
Right.
But then suddenly there was, like, the skinny Kyle Lowry picture, and then they start that season 5-0, and Lowry looks incredible again after looking just, like, so broken down at the end of the previous season, and suddenly, you know, I was all in once again.
This is also the New Jersey season as well. I thought that was a nice little, like, revamp and refresh on what had all gone wrong the season before.
It's the Biombo and Scola season.
Yeah. Oh, Biombo, man. I'm so glad he got paid. I'm sorry it's kind of limited his, like, usefulness in the NBA now and no one wants him, but very glad he got paid. He deserved every penny he got after this season. Like, just delightful from start to finish. Jonas missed a bunch of games this year, right? And Biombo filled in for him, if I recall.
That's correct.
Yeah, and he was, like, really good. This was also the Damari Carroll season. And, like, I remember also this. I remember the Damari Carroll signing and being super thrilled about it because it happened the same day the Leafs traded Phil Kessel, Canada Day or whatever. I was at the Blue Jays game. I don't know why I went to the Blue Jays game on Canada Day. Goddamn rookie mistake right there. But I remember getting the news of Damari Carroll and Phil Kessel within, like, half an hour of each other as well. And just, like, during that day, I'm just sitting there, like, watching the Blue Jays play. And I'm just like, oh, wait, the Raptors are after LaMarcus Aldridge? And what, they're after Wes Matthews? Like, what's going on here? This is incredible. I'm talking myself into, like, DeMar, Wes Matthews, Damari Carroll lineups and, like, just getting super excited by them, even though Wes Matthews' Achilles at this point is like a string bean. I was pretty thrilled. So I was looking forward to this season going in. This, like, also personally was my first season covering the team, like, in person, which was cool. So I'll always have sort of fondness for it in that regard, too. But, as the season went on, it kind of just felt more and more real, right? It didn't feel like the season prior where there was just, like, a drop-off that was coming. I think for me, the big moment, there were two sort of linchpin moments of the season. January 3rd and 4th, they play a back-to-back against the Bulls and Cavs. And this is the Bulls game where Jimmy Butler scores 40 and a half and sends Damari Carroll to the operation room. And then they lose to the Cavs the next game. And then you get, like, Tim and Sid being like, they should trade Kyle and DeMar, and this is over, this is terrible, blow it up. And then they go on an 11-game winning streak right away out of that. And it was just like, hell yeah. I'm glad that, like, the timing of this could not have been better for the take artists who were, like, really, really, like, upset and, like, whiny that the Raptors had lost a couple games in a row.
Yeah, I mean, that Jimmy Butler game was ridiculous.
It sucked ass.
And the fact that DeMar, like, basically didn't play for the rest of that season was it was incredible. But it happened for me earlier than that. Like, first of all, there was the Corey Joseph game winner against the Wizards.
Hell yeah.
In late November. That was an incredible moment. And then the one that really sticks out to me and is just, like, one of my all-time favorite Raptors losses is that game against the Warriors. The Warriors are 20-0 coming in, and it's an afternoon game, I believe on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Oh, no, sorry. It's on
a Saturday.
In Toronto. And they're 20-0. Like, it was ridiculous. And, like, the Raptors had actually almost gotten them in Golden State earlier that season, too.
Yeah.
So, just an incredible game. Lowry has, I think, 41 in that game. Steph has 44. And the Raptors have, like, a lead with 4 or 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. They're up by 3 points, and they're down by 3 points. Lowry gets an and-one layup to drop, but he can't make the free throw.
Yeah.
And so they lose that game by three. But it was just, like, I remember watching that and feeling like it was real at that point, you know? Like, the fact that they had taken this juggernaut that they had already almost beaten and went down to the wire with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was an amazing game.
Yeah, I was at a work Christmas party at the Scarborough Delta for this game, and dinner was at like 6:30 or something. And I remember me and my cousin just like leaving dinner to go watch the end of this game in the hotel bar. We were just like, no, we can't be here for this. We have to go watch this game. What an insane starting lineup for this team, and insane that it actually like kept up. Lowry, DeRozan, Carroll, Scola, Biombo. Like, and no one had a good game in the starting lineup outside of Kyle. Kyle was 14 to 26 for 41 points, 6 of 10 from deep. DeMar was 5 of 19. Carroll was 4 of 10, fine. Scola was 2 of 9. And then Biombo, 14 minutes, had no points and didn't even attempt a shot. Looking at this box score, Bebe had a ridiculous game. He was 7 of 9. He had 14. I guess Corey Joseph was pretty good. But, like, no one in this game outside of Kyle was particularly good to the degree that you would expect that they would have, like, kept pace with the Warriors. But they did. And it was just, like, yeah. After this, they kind of went on a run, right? Like, they were 12 and 9 at this point. Like, they rattled off some wins to get up to 56 by the end of the year at this point. Like, they didn't start on the same pace that they ended up finishing the season with. So, yeah, that game stands out quite a bit. Then there's obviously the step back Kyle game against the Cavs, where they win in Toronto 99-97. That was a really good one. That any game against the Cavs where they won always felt pretty good. And then
The Lowry step back over Dellavedova is just an all-timer.
Yeah.
Like, they had been trailing that entire game. DeMar, I think, was sick or something. He only had one field goal that game. Lowry ended up with 43.
Yeah.
And they were, like, a game behind the Cavs for first in the East at that point in time, too. And it just, like, I remember feeling like there had never been a more important regular season game for them before.
Honestly, that still might. Was just, yeah. I know everyone's like, oh, like every new big game is like, oh, the biggest game in Raptors regular season history. Like, this one actually might still hold up as like the most memorable, biggest, like whatever regular season game. As big as regular season games can be for a team that wins 50 games a year at this point.
Kyle Lowry doesn't show up in big games.
Yeah, like, eat shit.
This whole season was like a giant rebuke to that concept, man. Like that Warriors game, that game against the Cavs, and then, you know, several playoff performances in which he showed out.
Yeah. So the playoffs start. The Raptors lose to the Pacers at home in game one. By now, the game one thing is just like a joke after this happens. And still would not end for quite a while. Was their first game one win last year against the Wizards? Am I?
It was.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah.
Apologies for all the swears on today's episode. This podcast is engendering some feelings, apparently. That Pacer series happens. I don't know. What an ugly playoff run, to be honest. It was amazing, and I will remember every second of it and cherish it, but, like, just so ugly for, like, the large majority of it.
Yeah, utterly sickening. but it's we get some really great individual moments peppered throughout the hideousness of that playoff run. And obviously, you know, that Game 5 comeback against the Pacers and the Norm Duncan transition that tied it up.
Yeah.
You know, the lineup that Frank Vogel ran out there without Paul George to start that fourth quarter. Rodney Stuckey losing the ball out of bounds and Drake clapping in his face.
Oh, my God, yes.
And then the Solomon Hill three that wasn't.
Long-fingered Solomon Hill.
Yeah. Like, what a game.
Yeah.
And,
honestly, and might then, be the game upon which the trajectory of the Raptors hinges the most. Like, even today. Like, I think they lose that series, they blow it up. I really do. I think DeMar probably walks. That was DeMar's free agent year, right? Yeah. And I think they probably trade Kyle. And I think that's just like that, that. I think that's probably the end of that era if they lose Game 5 and then Game 6, which they got killed in Game 6 after winning Game 5. But like that, that the entire following 2 years, 3 years now that we're into after that is totally different if they lose that Game 5, I think.
For sure. And I mean, like Zach Lowe has reported that Dwayne Casey would have been fired if they had lost that series. Yep. So, but they survive it. They hold on in Game 7 after like nearly blowing a 15-point fourth quarter lead.
Yep.
And then Game 1 against Miami happens. It's kind of a sleepy game. Neither team's playing particularly well. And the Raptors are down 3 points with no timeouts left and 3 seconds left to go in regulation. And as far as like singular moments, you know, not games or moments in time, but just like things that have happened on a basketball court, I think this was like number one for me, this Lowry heave.
It's the craziest shit I've ever seen.
a moment of pure bliss and like utter befuddlement and like just bananas.
Like, you know the elevator situation at Scotiabank Arena now, then the ACC. It can be a little dicey after a game. And if you don't get on the first one down, you're going to be waiting a little bit and you might miss the start of the coach or whatever. So I was standing in the stairwell, ready to, like, leap and go down the elevator. I had all my stuff ready, and I was, like, getting a head start on everybody because I was like, I'm sad. This is stupid. I'm just going to get out of here right now. And then Kyle hits that shot, and I try to – I'm not Reynolds here. I try to keep it even keel on press row. But, like, I lost my shit. Like, I – like, arms in the air, just like, holy God, what the hell just happened? I don't think I've ever heard the ACC louder than that. Matt Devlin's call for it, like, watching it back, still gives me chills. Just insane. Then the overtime happens, and it's a bummer, even though Jonas plays really well. And then I guess one of the lowest points for me of the last however long, 5 years it's been now – I should know what time frame we're talking about, is honestly, when Jonas goes down in game three against the Heat?
Yeah.
He goes down with that ankle injury, and like I was just bumming hard, man. I was like, it was a real coming out party for him. He'd beasted a couple games against the Pacers, and it was just killing the Heat, and somehow the Jonas-Whiteside matchup was like the only compelling thing going on in that series to begin with. Like, it was ugly ass basketball, and like it's doubly sad, I suppose, because like for me to be upset about not watching Hassan Whiteside is sad on its own. Like, well, it's supposed to be a good thing to not watch Hassan Whiteside, but even then, it just like him going down really spoiled everything. And I know they won that game, but just like as the injury happened, it was just like, really, man? Like, it's been unwatchable swill so far, and you're just gonna make it even worse by having this injury. It just sucked.
Yeah, and I think Whiteside had already gotten injured at that point.
And he got injured earlier in this game, right? Or did he miss the start of this game?
Yeah, he did. And then, you know, the Heat are basically running, like, Luol Deng like, who else did they have, even? They had Luol Deng.
Joe Johnson.
Or, like, Udonis Haslem at center, basically.
Oh, yeah. Josh McRoberts. Josh McRoberts killed them for a little bit of that series, too.
Yeah.
It sucked.
And then he was never heard from again.
Nope.
He, like, randomly broke his ankle in, like, game six of the series.
Yeah.
And then never played again. But, yeah, JV had 16 and 12 in 22 minutes of that game before he got hurt.
Yeah, sucked a lot.
Yeah. But that was also the game in which Lowry, like, finally broke out of his shooting slump, and he carried them to that win, so.
Well, yeah, because it was after game – was it game one against the Heat, like, the heave shot? Because he was, like, 1 of 10 or something from three in that game, and his one hit was that half-court heave. And that was when he had the performative, like, shooting – solo shooting workout after the game, right? That was that game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I think it was after that game, and he also had, like, the softball-size goiter on his elbow.
Yes, I forgot about that. It was although I do think there was some Photoshop action going on when people were like posting photos of it. I could never really tell exactly how big his elbow was. I don't think it was like Blake Griffin when he had that like infection going on, but I think it was certainly something that needed to be drained. But yeah, he breaks out, and then obviously game seven against the Heat. It's probably my — I don't know. It's tough to sort of decipher what the highest point is for me and, like, the best I've felt about the Raptors at any time. But That end of game 7, after Kyle completely goes off, he has, what does he have in this game? 35 on 11 of 20. Biombo has 17 and 16. DeMar, like, didn't have a crazy efficient game, but still had a cool 28. And, like, even Damari Carroll hit his threes and was pretty good. And just, like, they completely outclassed the Heat in that series. And it was like, oh, my God, they actually look like a real team that's not just playing this, like, grimy sludge ball. And it just felt really good. And I remember I was writing in the quick recap for that game for Raptors HQ, and I was sitting up in the gondola. I was like, I'm just going to write it up here. And I was like on the verge of tears just writing that thing. I'm just being like, fuck, man, they did it. Like, they're in the conference finals. This is crazy. That was a fake Tupac at Young and Dundas day, right?
That's when I think so, yeah. Okay, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
The high-stepping it across the intersection at Young and Dundas.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was one of the most purely joyful games for sure.
Yeah.
And also, just the, you know, a weird random aside, but Blake Murphy, one of the all-time best pieces he ever wrote, was like a recap of that game.
Yeah, I think it's the best piece I ever wrote too. Like, thinking back to it, it's the one I'm happiest with, I think. It was very raw emotion, and it was very quick after the game that I got posted, but I was just like sitting in the gondola by myself, like on the verge of tears, talking about how, like, the Raptors hit their ceiling, and that's not a thing most teams get to do. Because I guess there was no real expectations against the Cavs, right? It was, you know, they're going to lose to the Cavs. This was the year that the Cavs won the title. They were a fantastic team. And I had no illusions of the Raptors getting to the finals. But just, like, getting to where everyone thought they could get to, not a lot of teams actually reach their sort of become fully actualized, right, and reach what their potential is. And the Raptors did that, and it was after so many years of just, like, being sad about the team and then the playoff struggles the year before, and even just how ugly it took, like, how gross it was on the way to getting to the conference finals. I don't know. It felt really, it was just a different sensation that I've ever felt with the Raptors before, I suppose, is the best way to describe that. It was, I get a little misty-eyed over here.
Yeah, I mean, the amazing thing is, and like, I fully didn't expect to have like any other moments like that for the rest of the season. But then they have these unbelievable two games.
Yeah, man.
Against the Cavs to even that series after just getting dummied in the first two, and Biombo has that 26 rebound game 3.
Yeah.
Like, another just, like, random incredible moment that I remember from the end of that game, he gets hit in the balls, like, in like, the very last play of the game.
Yeah.
And he goes down in a heap. And JV was already out. Biombo had been incredible. And I'm watching, you know, with a few friends, and we're all holding our breath and just, like, praying that it wasn't anything serious and that it was just a dick shot.
Yeah.
And so they show the slow motion replay, and we all just break out into a chant of balls. Like, we're so happy. Like, nobody had ever been so happy to see a nut shot before. And I'm pretty sure it was Dante Jones that delivered it too, fittingly.
Oh, definitely. This is only NBA skill, was punch people in the dick.
Yeah.
This was
game 4. I mean,
yeah, game 4 to me is my favorite of the two. I can't remember what game it was where Biombo had that stretch where he had the dunk and then the block and then the dunk. Like, that is one of the craziest, like, minutes of Raptors basketball you'll ever see. I can't remember if it was game 3 or 4, but for me, game 4, and I talk about this ad nauseum at this point, like, the stretch in the fourth quarter where the Cavs were scoring on every single possession with that fucking bench unit, with Iman Shumpert, Richard Jefferson, Dellavedova, LeBron and Channing Frye, and they were running the same goddamn option play over and over and over and scoring every single time. Yet the Raptors, like,
straight possessions.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. But the Raptors kept scoring. They scored like 11 of those 14 possessions the other way. So they ended up being able to hang on. And for me, that was like the, you know, maybe game 3 was, although the Cavs aren't really trying and whatever, and like they kind of pack it in. But like, you could tell they were actually going for it in game 4. And the Raptors took their best punch and survived it. And that was sort of the moment where I was like, okay, like, the Raptors can hang at least a little bit, and it's not completely a wash. And I felt better after that game than I have after any Raptors game, I think, ever, just in terms of, like, their level of play.
Yeah, there's this incredible moment in the first half of that game when the Raps went up, like, 20 points.
Yeah.
When LeBron goes up for what looks like a clear alley-oop, and Biombo meets him at the rim with like a two-handed block.
It was a fucking block. It was not a goddamn foul.
And it's called a foul, and it's just like the crowd reacts, but you know, immediately after they process their disappointment at it being called a foul, they just like erupt in cheers.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the loudest I've ever heard a crowd cheer for a foul.
Yeah.
That was an amazing moment. And Lowry was just insane in this game.
Yeah.
35 points on 14 of 20. Like, you know, one more time for the Lowry doesn't come through in big moments crowd. He was so good. He ices this game when he burns J.R. Smith off the dribble and gets a clear layup. And, like, you go back and watch the replay of that, and Tristan Thompson is, like, desperately trying to come over and help at the rim, and Biombo just has him arm locked, like, won't let him go.
It's redemption for the bullshit foul call when he blocked LeBron.
Yeah, agreed.
One of DeMar's best playoff games, too.
It was
14-23.
Two of them finished with 67 in the game on 28-43 shooting. So. Yeah,
wild stuff.
I was fortunate enough to attend that game, and that's like it's up there among the best sporting events I've seen live. Up there with Jays Rangers Game 5.
Oh God, yeah, no kidding. So then we go to 2016-17. I guess the DeMar signing always felt like a formality. I know Stephen A. was like, he's going to the Lakers. And it was like, nah, he's going to stay. I never really had any concern about that. So he stays. They go into 2016-17. And weird season. I don't really know how I feel about 2016-17. Like, well, how do you sort of recall feeling about that year?
This is another one where I think the team was really good. And the way that it ended, I think, undersold how good that team actually was.
Yeah.
It was like a weirdly anonymous year, at least for the first half of it. Aside from the fact that Lowry was just like, this was his best season.
He was ridiculous.
If he got to
man.
Like play that whole year. That was the best that he'd ever played.
Yeah.
And I remember like early in the year, there were those two Utah games. They played them like a week apart and Lowry utterly decimated them in both of those games.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go on this weird slide where suddenly they can't win.
Mm-hmm.
And Lowry comes out with these like cryptic comments after they blow a big lead against the Pistons. And the next day they swing the Ibaka trade.
Yeah, that January was rough, man. It was so weird because it felt like everything fell apart when Patrick Patterson got hurt. I think it was during the Phoenix game, December 29th. Patrick Patterson got hurt, and then they were kind of 500 for the next couple weeks, but then they went on this like crazy slide where they lost most of their games in January into February before the All-Star break. And it was just like, it really did feel like a critical point where, hey, like, what's going to happen this offseason? Kyle might leave. Like, every loss felt like it was denting the potential of Kyle returning. And, you know, it felt like, hey, this is the beginning of the end almost. And I remember, it just, for some reason, Patrick Patterson going down threw the entire team off. And ultimately,
well, the reason was they didn't have any other power forwards.
Well, yeah, true, true. So the All-Star break happens. They kind of have a little bit of a slide going into it. They lose another goddamn game to the Bulls just before the All-Star break. And they come out. They beat the Hornets. Actually, yeah, that last win before the All-Star break was a good one because that was the Hornets
DeLon
game.
DeLon Wright coming out party.
Yeah, it was the DeLon, Corey Joseph, Kyle Lowry backcourt, the three-point guard lineup they rolled out and with, like, Damari Carroll and I think, who was
playing center?
And Pirtle, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And they made that comeback there. And then they go into the All-Star break, they make the trade, and then
Kyle Lowry goes to the All-Star game.
Oh, my God.
Shoots a 9 in the three-point shootout. A 9.
Yes.
Goes golfing. I think plays in the game, in the All-Star game itself.
Yeah.
And then it's the trade deadline. Then they trade for P.J. Tucker, mm-hmm. like, right at the buzzer. And excitement is, like, at an all-time high. And then it's announced that Lowry needs wrist surgery.
Yeah.
And he's out, like, 4 to 6 weeks.
God. That was... This is one of the weirdest, like, emotional roller coaster stretches, I think, for me as a Raptors fan. Like, just in general, not just over the last 5 years. Because going into the break, everything feels sad. Then they get that Hornets win, and it's like, okay, maybe everything's okay. They made the Ibaka trade just before that Hornets game, right? Am I wrong?
Yeah. He was, like, I think, in attendance for that game.
Yeah, that's right. He didn't play.
It's pretty close.
But, do you remember, like, where you were when you heard the Ibaka trade news and, like, how you felt?
I was at work, actually, so, like, I wound up writing a long feature about it.
Okay.
which I basically, you know, praised Masai. I thought it was a great trade. I was thrilled.
Yeah. I was feeling bittersweet about everything, but I knew it was a deal that had to be made.
Yeah, understandably so. But I thought it was a great trade. And, you know, even to this day, it's paying dividends. So,
yeah. I remember I was at work as well. I was doing my gas meter reading job for Enbridge, and I was walking around, and it was like minus 20. It was freezing ass cold. And I remember getting the new notification and being like, holy shit, they're doing the thing. Like, they're doing this thing. They made the trade. They're like going for it. And I remember just I didn't have anyone to talk to. I was just walking by myself doing my route. And I come across this dude at some house. And I'm like, are you a Raptors fan? He's like, yeah. I'm like, Serge Ibaka. He's like, Serge Ibaka. And then we just like shared a moment. Never saw that person again. And then obviously, yeah, the whole Lowry thing happens. And then honestly, that Celtics game on the Friday, and even the Blazers game, where I think still those first two games out of the break, where we didn't really know what the extent of Kyle's injury was, and it was like, oh, maybe he's just going to be out like a couple games or whatever. It wasn't until after the Blazers game when it was announced that he was going to miss like however long, 6 weeks or whatever it was. And then,
right.
So those first two games, I remember just being like, oh my God, they won these two games. Like PJ Tucker's ripping the ball out of Isaiah Thomas's hands like a baby. And then the Blazers game, Ibaka had a really great game. I think he scored like 20 plus or something like that. Shot yeah. incredibly. And it was like, all right, they're going to do the thing and Kyle's going to come back and they're just going to like walk to the playoffs. And then boom, Kyle's out for most of the regular season. And then you come to that Knicks game on the 27th. The night that you've learned that Kyle's going to be out for a long time, and it had potential to get very dark. And honestly, for the most part, it was a very dark game. I remember watching this game at my house in Toronto with Will Liu. He came over to watch this game. We had watched the Terrence Ross denied buzzer beater earlier in the season. That was an emotional experience. And then this one was just like that. But then when DeMar hit that shot over Derrick Rose to win it, it was really special, man. It was okay, maybe they'll be all okay. Maybe they're going to just ride this like terrible offense but an incredible defense with Ibaka and Tucker as like the 4-5 combo of the future. And it was just all going to be okay. Do you remember sort of your feelings as this sort of stretch of the season was playing out?
Yeah, I mean, they were winning super ugly. And I think it actually turned out to be like a low-key pretty fun stretch. First of all, DeMar like carries the team.
Insane.
Offensively. I mean, that Celtics game was just the Raps are down big early, and mm-hmm. then Damari Carroll decks Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas does the finger guns in his face. PJ Tucker's on no sleep, but somehow like manages to be the best player on the floor. They completely turn that game around.
And then it's like DeMar, calling out DeMar's defense after the game.
Yeah,
it's like we'll coach him up. We'll get him better.
DeMar had like 43 in that game too, so that yeah. just like made it doubly amazing that he was getting called out. But then, yeah, it kickstarts this stretch where they turn into this really scrappy team. And my single favorite game in that entire stretch is that Bulls game.
Yep, I have the box score already prepared.
So they've lost 12 in a row against the Bulls. They're down 15 with like 5 minutes left. And this isn't I don't even think that Jimmy Butler was playing in this game. Is that possible?
No, he played. He played 44 minutes. He had 37 points. Yeah, he was very good.
Okay. But, like, the Bulls were not particularly good.
No, they're 5 games below 500.
And then all of a sudden, like, the game starts to turn. The Bulls start making, like, a couple bad turnovers. PJ Tucker hits a couple of threes. And
Serge Ibaka and Robin Lopez get in a fight.
Yes, yes. Serge gets tossed from that game after throwing hands with Robin Lopez.
Honestly, that punch to this day, like, had that landed, I think we're talking about, like, a very, very, very serious suspension for Serge. Like, that was a bullet of a jab.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fortunately, it didn't connect. so I think he only got a one-game suspension.
Yeah.
But, so this is another game that I was, like, fortunate enough to attend, and the crowd was literally on its feet for the entire final 5 minutes of regulation and all of overtime.
Yeah.
Because everybody there knew, like, how important it was to beat the Bulls and break the curse in this, like, honestly meaningless regular season game. It was kind of surreal.
I think, also, again, shouting out Blake Murphy, I think on this day he had dropped his piece where he'd gone back over the course of the losing streak and kind of went through every loss. And it's almost like it broke the curse, that, like him writing that whole piece out. I think like Jack shouted him out on the broadcast, if I recall. And I remember writing a thing after this game because DeMar was insane in this game. I wrote like a top 10 DeMar DeRozan plays from the fourth quarter or something like that. And I had enough content to make it a very real top 10. It was fucking wild.
The block on Joffrey LaVerne is the one that I remember.
Yes.
Above all.
Oh my God. It was outstanding. That was maybe my favorite DeMar game. It's like right there with the Bucks game last year where he goes for 52, or 53, whatever he ended up getting. Wonderful stuff. The one where I was rooting against him actually beating Terry's record. It's like, you don't need these free throws, DeMar. It's fine. And then so that season continues on. Kyle comes back late, and then you get the Bucks series. Do you have like recollections of that series and you know how you felt about that playoff run? Yeah.
So I remember I watched game one of that series with Will in Jurassic Park.
Okay.
Utterly dispiriting game, just demoralizing. Lowry gets outplayed by Matthew Dellavedova. It's really dark. They squeak out game two. Lowry hits a big shot at the end of that one to kind of redeem himself. Mm-hmm. After the Bucks had actually tied it, Giannis hit a three to tie that game late in the fourth quarter. Just utter panic. And then game three is like grim death. They get blown off the floor. The game's over after 5 minutes. And this is the famous, Giannis looking at the box score after the game with puzzlement as he says, only 8 points? And all free throws?
Yeah.
And I thought they were going to lose the series at that point in time. I really did.
Yeah, and then the next game, game four, I remember I've never been more stressed out for a Raptors playoff game in my entire life. I watched this game at my girlfriend's place in Hamilton before I moved here. I was just like a wreck the entire game. And it was good it was a 3 o'clock start because had it been like a wait till 8 o'clock type thing, I would have been an absolute mess and just a write-off for the whole day. And this is where they make the starting lineup change, where they put in Norman Powell in place of Jonas Valanciunas, am I correct?
Yes.
Yeah, they start Serge at center, and they have Damari, Norm, Damari, and Kyle. And Norm goes 3 of 3 from deep. And I remember, so this is like one of those weird passages of a game where I have felt like really, really good. It's one of the highs for me over the last 5 years is every time Norm hit a three in that game, it felt like they had solved the series almost. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, oh, okay, they're good. They figured it out. The Bucks have no more bullets to fire, and they figured it out. I know it was an ugly game. They won 87-76 or whatever it was, but DeMar had a great game. Kyle was okay. Serge was awful. I remember he almost shot them out of it in the fourth quarter. He missed, like, 12 straight shots or something insane like that, but just kept taking the same shot over and over and over again. But I just remember every time Norm did something in that game, I was like, okay, they figured this out. Norm's saving their ass again, and it's all good. I don't know. Did you feel the same level of confidence or no?
No, I mean, first of all, I was at a wedding this day. It was my now fiance's brother's wedding. So right. We were taking photos all that day, and I'm like sneaking out to like stream bits of the game on my phone.
Yeah.
So I didn't really watch it in full, but I watched most of the fourth quarter, and it was just, anxiety the entire time. PJ's defense in that fourth quarter was amazing.
Yeah.
I think that was really what turned it. But from this point forward, I mean, Norm just saved the series. Do you know what he shot from three in this series?
Like 100%?
10 for 11. 10 for 11.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, and like they had a great game five. They just blew the Bucks out.
Yeah.
And then game six, it is looking like it's going to go that way. They're up 25 points in the third quarter.
Yeah. And then the Bucks go on like some ungodly run.
Yeah, the Bucks wind up leading by 2 points in like the last 2 minutes, and the Raptors dig themselves out of it with a Patrick Patterson dunk.
Yep.
A Corey Joseph three.
Yep.
And then that DeMar driving dunk over Thonmaker and Giannis to basically put it on ice.
Yep. That was at the same time, Bruno was going nuts. And it's insane to think Pascal Siakam is playing in the G League Finals during this game and not on the Raptors. It's fucking wild.
Finals MVP, Pascal Siakam.
Yep.
I wonder, like, if he wins Finals MVP this year, I guess that would probably make him the first player to have ever won Finals MVP in both the G League and the NBA.
You'd think so,
probably,
yeah.
Probably the last.
Until Jordan Lloyd does it this year and next year.
Yeah.
Or Chris Boucher, suppose, maybe. Yeah. So, what a weird box score for that Game 6. Only two Raptors in double figures. DeMar has 32 on 12 of 24. Kyle is a pretty decent game, but he's like low volume. He's probably just doing his Kyle, like run the show without doing all that much type thing. And then, yeah, just a scrappy, put it together type of effort. And yeah, they held on. And then the Cavs series happens. And then like you go from the high of winning a series in under seven games for the first time ever to LeBron throwing down an off-class dunk in the first minute of the fucking game one, and I was just like, oh, well, all right, that was fun.
Yeah, the series was literally over after that alley-oop.
Yep.
It was like 30 seconds into the game, and I remember tweeting, like, cancel the series. Like, you know, not long after that, he was, like, swilling the beer on the sideline and, like, spinning the ball in Ibaka's face. And
oh
it was
my
just,
God.
Lowry sprains his ankle, and then doesn't come back, reportedly by choice because he's about to be a free agent and has his eyes on the Sixers or the Spurs, and it seems like he might be out the door. And that of course leads to Masai uttering those famous words, the culture reset.
Yeah, I forgot about the culture reset, to be honest. What did you think was going to happen when he said that?
I thought Dwayne was gone for sure. I thought there was a decent chance that DeMar was going to get traded.
Yeah.
It just seemed like you couldn't have really known what he was hinting at, but it certainly seemed like sweeping personnel changes were going to be part of the equation.
Yeah.
So it was definitely a surprise when that did not at all happen.
And then they come into I remember like the Ibaka thing, he signed before Lowry, right? If I'm not mistaken.
I think they signed in conjunction. Like it happened on the same day, almost at the same time, because they had the same agent.
Right. I feel like Ibaka signed first, because I remember, like, I had prepared a Kyle's returning post, because I think it was like a few days into July, and I was like, okay, it feels like it's probably gonna happen here. Because the Spurs, all the money's kind of dried up around the league. The Wolves went and got Jeff Teague, and it's like, okay, that was a logical destination. That's not there anymore. And it just felt like there were no other teams that were going to sign Kyle, which is exactly what happened. And all the reporting suggests that like he probably didn't really want to come back to Toronto as his first choice, but he just kind of was forced into it. And the Raptors obviously had a lot of incentive to keep him and give him all the money. And I remember I wrote a post like, hey, Kyle's coming back, and I had put like, just had it prepared and pre-prepared it. And I went to go see, I think, the Big Sick, and I came out and Kyle had signed. And it was like, oh, such a nice relief. It was just like, okay, this is all, he's coming back. The era of fun, because I was team run it back at this point. Like, I was like, yeah, losing the second round every year, it's better than being shitty. And so I was team run it back. And then they come into the preseason and they play that game in like Hawaii against the Clippers, and they shoot like what 45 threes in that game or something, and it's like, oh shit, what's going on here? This seems interesting.
Yeah, and they hit like 12 of them too.
Yeah, it was terrible. Yeah, they were shooting terribly the entire preseason. Did someone get hurt in the preseason? No, that was Jared Sullinger the year before. Forgot about Jared Sullinger. Maybe the most anonymous Raptor of the last 5 years, if we're being honest. But yeah, the last season was just a treat, man. It was just so fun, like from the game where they blew out the Cavs with the bench kicking their ass and Fred kind of having his moment. It was just the unexpectedness of it all really kind of resonated with me. And it was like, yeah, like this is a better season because the expectations coming in where this team was going to be like a middle of the pack playoff team and it's fine. And they're like, well, maybe they can change their offense a bit, but will it stick? And ultimately, the offense stuck, and it was like the defense that let them down. But just, I don't know, the emergence of Pascal and Jakob Poeltl, and it just, for me, it was just a not quite the same heights, obviously, as the 2015-16 season with like the playoff run and everything. But I've never enjoyed watching basketball more than last year. It was just so carefree.
It was special, man. Like, yeah. I think, you know, regardless of what happens with the Raptors moving forward, I just think there will never be a season like that one.
Yeah.
It was so unique and so unexpected and so joyful.
Yeah.
You know, until it wasn't. But it's honestly crazy to think, looking back, that, like, the Spurs had a ton of cap room that summer, and they could have probably just had Lowry if they wanted to.
Yeah.
And instead they decided to give all that money to Patty Mills, Pau Gasol, and Rudy Gay, and look where they are now.
And just, like, just ushered Kawhi Leonard into our arms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But yeah, I mean, moments from that season, like the Siakam breakout game against the Warriors.
Yep.
A game in which Poeltl also has 11 offensive rebounds. And yeah. Kevin Durant on the post-game interview shouts out Jakob Poeltl. demolishing the Cavs on national TV. That almost comeback against the Warriors after they'd given up, like, I don't know, 80-something points in the first half and then came all the way back to within 1 point.
Yeah. The Rockets game.
DeMar's 52 against the Bucks.
Both Rockets games, really. Were awesome because the first one was OG's first start. Yeah, the first one was OG's first start, and they won in Houston. And then the one in Toronto was amazing. They just looked like the better team.
17 game win streak.
Yeah, yeah, and the Raptors just looked like the better team the entirety of that game. I know they won it, by three, but like they seemed equipped to win that game in a way that maybe like I think they had like a. Like, Harden had a fourth quarter where it was like, oh, shit, he's going to do the Harden thing. But I never really felt totally concerned they were going to lose that one. And then, yeah, that Warriors game where Pascal had the third quarter. I was listening to that on the radio just being like, what? Are they, like, getting the names wrong here? Is, like, Marv Albert on the call getting the name wrong of, like, the guy going off right now? Yeah, man. Just, I even remember, like, not even being that mad when they lost to the Knicks. Remember when they had that... third quarter where they gave up like a 25-0 run and Tim Hardaway had like 38. I was just like, I can't be mad at this. Like, they're really good. They're winning all these games and like good on the Knicks for being good. Like, the Raptors are at the point where I don't have to be upset about them losing anymore. That was kind of a big moment for me too.
Yeah. I definitely just enjoyed like every ounce of that season, like every minute of basketball, and tried to watch the team as much as I possibly could.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's that Pistons game with, like, the DeMar dunk on Tolliver and the Fred game winner.
Yeah.
The JV fake handoff and the buzzer-beating dunk. Like, just so many great moments.
Yeah. Delightful stuff. It's all kind of... The cloud over it is the fucking Cavs series, but, like... Even then, there were moments in that series where it was like, yeah, like, they can win this. Like, the game one... God... I feel so. Is that why Fred's broken this year?
Like, I don't know, man. Yeah, it's like he hasn't been the same since. Was it Bam Adebayo who just killed him with
crushed
that screen,
him on screen
in game 82?
Yeah, yeah, and then
chasing just, 60 wins, man.
Yeah, it just he missing those threes at the end of the game, like the regulation, and then having the chance to like redeem himself. The poetry there could have been so. Perfect, and then it just didn't line up that way. Jesus. Against the Cavs, Jonas had 21 and 21 in game one.
Yeah. Do you remember that stretch in the third quarter when he was just feasting on Kevin Love?
Yep.
And, like, he gets an and one that puts the Raptors up 10 or 11, and he's, like, got this finger wag, and you can hear him, like, mouthing, he can't guard me.
Yeah. I think I wrote about just how, like, oh, if Kevin Love's going to shoot 3 of 13, Jonas can be on the floor. They can leave him, and that's fine. Then Kevin Love got hot, and we know how the series ended. Honestly, though, I think Game 3 might have negatively affected my mood more than Game 1 did. I remember watching Game 3 thinking they were going to lose, because they were down quite a bit at halftime, if I recall. And I was just, like, starting to eulogize a little bit. I remember I was listening to Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, and I was, like, making up, like, dumb song titles to go along with the, like, as I was listening through the album, like, dumb Raptors, Cavs, domination puns that were going through, like, my mind, like, rewriting the lyrics. And as I was doing this, the Raptors started making a comeback. And I was like, oh, shit, maybe this is good luck. Maybe I should be doing this all the time. And then, like, they play Surge and OG for, like, what felt like the entire second half. And Siakam as well. It was in that front court with Serge too. And it just felt like, you know, DeMar got benched, but like just the lineup they had a mix that was just making sense. And OG at 20, he hits that three, and then we know what the fuck happens. But I don't know. Like, what was your sort of emotional trajectory during that game?
I never got too emotionally invested in it just because I expected them to lose the series. Right. And once that game started and the Raps got down early, I expected them to lose the game. So I was almost just numb at that point.
Yeah.
And the comeback was like a really nice, pleasant surprise. Lowry and OG were both incredible. And, you know, my big takeaway from that game was just that OG was a stud.
Yeah.
Like, he was so goddamn good. And seeing him do it in the playoffs, like, really, it was easy to forget, but there had been, like, a moment late in the season, or, like, a stretch late in the season when he had, like, looked almost unplayable.
Yeah.
But he had a big lull, and we were kind of wondering whether he was going to get played off of the floor in the playoffs and, like, was going to be excised from the rotation.
Yeah.
And obviously that didn't happen at all. Like, he was, you know, maybe the best of those young guys in the playoffs, and that game solidified it for him. And obviously that three did as well.
Yeah, he very much had had big balls during those playoffs. Like, there was Sam Cassellian for sure.
But I wasn't like so emotionally invested. Like, I was really excited when he hit the three. But I think even if LeBron hadn't hit that ridiculous, you know, one-legged running bank shot, like, I think the Cavs would have won in overtime.
Yeah.
And I just, at least this way, we got to be part of an iconic LeBron moment. So
I guess for me, there was still like, had they won game three, there was still like a little tiny bit of me that was like, hey, like, all the numbers say they're the better team. They probably should have won two of the three games so far if they pull that out. Like, there was still a little inkling of me that said, hey, maybe they can win this. But it really seemed like game one kind of hung over them the entire time. And they were just like, this is never, we're never overcoming this ever, ever again. And like, they kind of kept pointing back to that too. It was like, yeah, well, game one happened, so we're off the hook for the rest of the series.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that the series is completely different if they win that game.
Yeah.
I don't think it's crazy to say that, you know, they maybe even win that series if they win game one.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's likely necessarily, but I do think that completely changed everything.
Reinforced all of the sort of boogeyman stuff that was in their heads, I think, going in, right? Like,
oh, for sure. And then, yeah. I mean, that game two, like, people forget, but, like, they were up at halftime of game two.
Yeah.
And just the fact was, like, the Cavs were so much looser than they were, and, like, LeBron with a 1-0 series lead and all the confidence in the world could afford to be taking those just utterly ridiculous fadeaways really concerning himself with whether, you know, the Cavs won or lost that game, because I think he knew at that point he was in the Raptors' head and he was just going to do whatever he wanted.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously game four of that series ends with DeMar in his final act as a Toronto Raptor clotheslining Jordan Clarkson and getting ejected.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Game four, I don't remember a second of. I know Kyle didn't do much, and DeMar didn't either, and that was about it.
Remember Bebe coming into the game in the second quarter?
Oh my god.
When it was still a 4-point game?
That's right. Now I remember it. Thanks for bringing it back. It's great to relive all of these moments. It's so nice. Yeah, that game and game four against the Wizards are probably the two games that I just just glazed over for the most. Just like, I can't experience this. I don't want to do this. This is terrible. And we know what the outcome is going to be. But obviously, we go into the summer, and they trade for goddamn Kawhi Leonard. And they fired Dwayne Casey, bring Nick Nurse in, and now we kind of are where we are now. It is so insane to, like, I was thinking about this. We'll probably wrap this up soon because we've been going for like an hour and a half. But I was thinking about this. Like during this whole week while ESPN was just crawling all over Toronto and like the Giants of Africa stuff's going on, you got all these like big names in Toronto. Like, it's ridiculous how far it's come with the Raptors since 2013. Like, it feels like a long time. Like, again, we've kind of rolled through these games, like these seasons in a very long fashion here. Like, there's a lot has happened, but at the same time, like, to go from what they were to what they are now in that short amount of time, it's remarkable. And, like, Masai, dude, like, just a statues, just multiple statues everywhere. Like, replace all the moose statues around the city with Masai statues. Like, really, it's just hard to really sort of understand how, like, quickly things turn around. And honestly, I'm starting to consider, like, when does it get to the point where the Raptors are, like, their goodness and their relevance kind of, like, makes it so you can't even wallow in the bad anymore. Because it's getting close to that thing. Like, I know most of their history is still bad, but like the last 5 years have been so comparatively good to those dark years. And especially now, it just seems like they've kind of leveled up a little bit this season too. Like, at some point, they're like, you can't really be like, oh, this is a very sad franchise now.
Yeah, I think I'm already there.
Yeah.
You know, I already feel like we've gotten past that. And maybe there are still, like, some stigmas about their playoff failures or, you know, playing in Canada in obscurity, all this stuff. But I really do think that's starting to fade. And, like, if they can, you know, put their best foot forward in the playoffs this year, I mean, whether they make the finals or not, like, if they go to the conference finals and have a competitive series against, you know, whether it's Milwaukee or Boston, whoever, like, I do think that that will go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And especially if Kawhi resigns. I mean, I think that would just kill it for good. Obviously, a lot still to be determined there, but, like, I think, and I talk about this all the time, like, it is a borderline miracle that they, without tanking, without bottoming out, went from, you know, where they were at the start of 2013-14 to where they are now.
Yeah, like
it's insane.
This is not a trajectory any team has taken, I don't think. Like, the closest you could say is maybe the Rockets being sort of ho-hum for a while and then trading for James Harden. But, like, just the... Like, the Raptors going from what they were and not getting... Like, just... I mean, I think a lot of this, obviously, there's going to be quite the legacy of player development for Masai and Dwayne Casey and Nick Nurse and the entire, you know, Raptors coaching staff and system, because, like, a big part of it, you know, to help augment getting the very good players and, you know, fostering Lowry and DeRozan's growth is just, like, they don't waste anything, right? Like, they use their picks and they sign undrafted free agent guys and they just have made good on everyone who's come through, save for, I guess, Bruno at this point. Like, everything they've done has led to something tangible for the team. Even though Norm Powell right now is kind of a disaster boy, like, he's saved the Raptors' asses twice in the playoffs, and that's a guy they traded Grievous Vasquez for, and also got the pick that became OG, and made Terrence Ross expendable, and that other first-round pick expendable. It's just, it's... All of it is just the sort of domino effect and just sort of the lineage of Masai's moves all kind of leading. Even the fact that, like, the Bargs trade yields the pick that eventually becomes Poeltl, who becomes part of the Kawhi trade. Like, all of his moves have kind of been building towards something. And obviously, I guess, like, the ultimate final test, the final boss, if you will, is signing Kawhi this offseason and convincing him over the course of a year, like, yeah, this is the place you want to be, but... Honestly, the way Masai's plans have kind of played out so far and the way he's talked since he got here, like, at some, I think the quote he's said the most is, at some point, someone's going to realize this is the place you want to be. Someone's going to realize how great it is here and what a great organization and city and culture and everything this team has to offer. And, like, honestly, if you had told me a year ago that Kawhi Leonard was going to be on this team, I would have thought you were insane. I said at the start of the offseason, like, there's no way they're trading for Kawhi, so stop asking me mailbag questions about it. It's not happening. And they did it anyway. And Masai, like, deserves insane credit for having the Cassells to do that, right? And like, not a lot of, I think there's a lot of teams right now kicking themselves for not putting their even, like, second best package forward to try to get Kawhi in a trade and being worried about all the mystery and whatever. And Masai was like, you know what? Like, we have to make this move. This is a move to make. And, you know, I don't know. Where are you at if in terms of, like, your confidence level that Kawhi is going to stay? It's obviously impossible. He's not a very knowable guy. But I don't know. Like, the situation that's been set up for it is it's kind of encouraging. And for me, like, for people like Windhorst and other people to be like, it's either the Raptors or Clippers, that's a win in itself at this point of the year to me.
Yeah, I think... I don't know. I can't call it, I guess, 50-50 if yeah. you're asking me, but, like, without knowing what he values and where his priorities lie, what he wants, I'm never going to be able to say with any kind of confidence, like, you know, if the Raptors make the finals, does that do it? Is that enough of a selling point, or does he really just kind of, like, want to go and play in LA?
Yeah.
I just don't know. But, you know, I think that the Raptors have made their best possible pitch. You know, they put him in a really good situation. They've put him front and center. You know, their offense revolves around him. Like, I think everybody has been really supportive of him in word and deed. Like, and he is on a team that is really well suited to both highlight him and also compliment him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can be that guy while also being surrounded by, like, really talented teammates. So from a basketball perspective, I think it's a great situation. You know, and culturally, I think it's a good fit too. It's just, it's really just a question of what he wants, but it doesn't matter to me. Yeah. You know, like Masai doesn't need him to resign to be vindicated for this.
That's true.
The trade, you know, like, and the way that it's worked out so far is vindication in itself. And, I mean, I've been thinking about this, like Masai is going to go to like the Basketball Hall of Fame, right? Like for everything he's done as an executive and like with, you know, Basketball Without Borders, Giants of Africa, like all this stuff.
Yeah, I think probably.
Like,
the only thing that stops him is if he like just stops doing basketball stuff relatively soon and just like decides to focus on charity stuff.
But like even which is possible,
yeah,
I suppose.
I wouldn't be shocked if he's not around 5 years from now.
Yeah.
But like I think what he's built, it seems lasting to me. And to build that in 5 years is, and obviously things can change, and like who knows, maybe MLSE's priorities will change, and like the money to sort of build outside of the salary cap structure in terms of just like putting resources into everything else that they have. Like I don't know. Maybe that goes away at some point. Maybe having Masai there as the figurehead that can be trusted by the ownership group, or who, I don't even know, whatever faceless person owns the team at this point. Like maybe without Masai that falls apart, but like it does feel lasting. It feels honestly why they were able to move on from Dwayne Casey, right? Like Dwayne was hired to be a culture builder and he did that, and then they outgrew that. And I think now they're kind of showing that they're self-sustaining at this point. Like this is just a franchise that is fully functioning. It knows what it's doing. It is an envy of most teams around the league. And for this all to happen in 5 years, just it boggles the mind. It really does. One last question.
Imagine thinking like the Rudy Gay trade. Like 5 years down the line was going to lead to the Raptors having Kawhi Leonard and being, you know, the best team in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, but it really has. Like it has, every move that Masai has made has been a stepping stone towards this, with really very few step backs. I mean, obviously the Damari Carroll thing and having to attach a pick to get rid of him was not awesome, but like other than that, I can't really think of like obvious missteps in Masai's management, right? And like again,
it's like that and the Bruno pick.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, but even then, it gave us. It's going to be a good one. So who cares? Where did the Raptor? The last one here for you. It's kind of an interesting thing because we talked about sort of the inability to wallow in the darkness of the franchise anymore. Where do you think the Raptors ranked before the Gay trade in terms of like sad boy franchises? And where do they rank now? Just like encompassing the whole history. Because I think you could argue before the Gay trade, they're maybe only ahead of like the Wolves.
Charlotte.
The Wolves and Grizzlies and maybe Charlotte as like the not like the, as like the saddest team, the saddest franchise history in the entire league. The Wolves, yes, and Grizzlies, obviously, they both made conference finals by that point. But, you know, Memphis has the whole Vancouver residue still stuck on it. And the Wolves, they went to a conference finals, but they were in like year 9 of a playoff drought by the time the Gay trade happened, and only had really had the Kevin Garnett years, and even then they didn't make good on those years. And other than that, they'd been a disaster. So like, I don't know, where did you have them before, and where do you think they are now?
Before, honestly, I would put them ahead of the Charlotte franchise, the Hornets / Bobcats.
Yeah.
And I think that's literally it. Like even, yes, Sacramento and Minnesota were sad at the time and like had, you know, were mired in their playoff droughts, but like the Wolves had some very fruitful Garnett years. They made it to the conference finals. They won 50 plus games a bunch of times and like had at least had an era of sustained success.
He won an MVP there too. Yeah. So
yeah, one of the three or four best players in the league, you know, there for like 12 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kings had had, you know, that great stretch with Weber and Divac and Peja, like those were great teams, iconic teams. You know, they go to game 7 of the conference finals against a three-peating, you know, historically good Lakers team.
Mm-hmm.
And the Raptors had never even remotely approached that. Obviously, their franchise history was shorter, so they didn't have as much of an opportunity. But at that point in time, they were 18 seasons in, 5 playoff appearances, 1 series victory, never more than 47 wins in a season.
And a shit ton of superstars departed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So, I think I would have ranked them 29th, honestly. Like, even the Grizzlies, they had the grit and grind thing. You know, they had this strong cultural identity and, like, a really nice run of solid seasons. They'd made it to the conference finals and beaten some good teams along the way. Like, the Raptors have never done anything approaching that. So,
Yeah, that's fair. Now, honestly, like, I'm rolling through the standings right now, just kind of looking at teams. Like, I would say the Bucks probably have a better history, but even then, like, it, like, Kareem is probably their peak way back in the day, right? And it's hard to, like, they haven't won anything, and they've had some pretty lean years. Obviously, Giannis kind of affects it now, and I guess longevity, you'd put the Bucks ahead of the Raptors in terms of, like, happiness overall as a franchise. Like, Sixers, Pistons, Pacers probably ahead of them, the Celtics too, the Magic. The Magic are an interesting one, I think, because
yeah, that's another team that's, like, you know, high highs and low lows, but again, like, yeah. The, you know, they have that Shaq and Penny team that is just one of the most iconic teams of our modern era.
Yeah. I would say the Wizards are definitely sadder than the Raptors at this point.
Yeah. Not and I think close. Now I would put, like, at this point in time, I would put the Raptors ahead of the Kings. Yep. I put them ahead of the Hawks, the Wolves.
Yeah.
The Nets probably.
Well, the Nets are terrible. What have they ever won? They had John Calipari for some time, and they had a nice finals run, but they got shit kicked. And now they're, yeah. And then they had an entire decade lost to Billy King and Mikhail Prokhorov.
Do they win any ABA championships?
I don't think so. Even if they did, does that matter?
I don't know.
Yeah. So yeah, I would say for sure Hornets, Wizards, Nets. The Knicks are an interesting one. You mentioned this in the DMs before we came on. Because, like, yes, they have two titles, but, like, do early 70s titles really count? And since then it's been god-awful. Where do you put them?
Yeah, I guess that one gets complicated just with, like, them having actually won titles before a long, long time ago, but nevertheless, they can hang the banners. And just, like, being an iconic franchise, even though they've, you know, become synonymous with bumbling incompetence in the last few years, like, they're still an iconic franchise, you know, and they still have some really good years in the Patrick Ewing era. They make the finals as an 8 seed in that lockout shortened 98-99 season with, like, Latrell Sprewell and Allen Houston, I think.
Yeah.
So still, like, definitely a more accomplished history than the Raptors. And, like, the Raptors still have, you know, some blind spots on the resume. They've never been in the finals. Yeah. They've never had a player make an all-defensive team. They're the only team in the league that hasn't put somebody on an all-defensive team before.
That's crazy.
They've never had an all-NBA first-teamer. They've never had anyone finish higher than 7th in MVP voting. Yeah. And, you know, they have these playoff flops that everybody likes to joke about, meme about. And so, you know, they're still they still have a lot to kind of shake off reputation-wise. But I definitely feel like that – reputation has changed a lot, so yeah. Yeah, I would put them. I feel like they're kind of like 21st, 22nd among saddest teams if we're taking the whole and not just where they are right now.
I think you could maybe bump them up to like 18th. Like, I think the Nuggets are probably sadder on the whole. Like, they never won they've never been to the finals, right? Am I wrong?
True.
There? And I know they've had like good teams, but I don't think they've ever had a team as good as this Raptors team. If that's like a hot take off the cuff, but like to think back, yes, their jerseys are nicer, but their jerseys now are ass, so I don't know. The Thunder's an interesting one, just because I guess with the Sonics, like they had a lot of I guess they won a title, never mind, like they're fine. Like the Clippers are definitely sadder than them.
Yeah, that's true. They've surpassed the Clippers, I think, at this point.
I think they've probably surpassed the Grizzlies now.
Yeah, the Pelicans for sure.
Oh God, that's also Bobcats, Hornets, adjacent. I don't even know what the hell. I'd say maybe their closest comp to me would be the Suns. The Suns obviously have a longer history, but like they've had some pretty dark periods as well, and kind of fell short when they did have their best shots. Maybe the Suns are more storied. I don't know, but like the point is
the Suns had like an incredible run in the early 90s.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Like those Barkley teams. And then they have that like Nash run, which is like, again, you know, if we're talking about iconic teams,
transformative.
And a team that really like was revolutionary and changed the NBA and is just going to be remembered for a really long time. Like, I think that's actually like the marker of like a distinguished franchise.
Yeah, you're right. They're ahead of the Raptors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think like, you know, it's like having a run where you have sort of one cohesive identity that defines like an era of successful basketball.
Yeah.
And I think you could say like the Raptors are kind of approaching that.
Yeah.
With this Lowry era and like everything that we've just gone over, you know, the last 5 years.
Yeah.
It's getting to that point, and especially, you know, if Kawhi sticks around and kind of bridges eras and takes that into the future, and they're able to sustain it for like another 5 or so years,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, they're starting to get into that conversation. But for now, I think they still have a long way to go.
Yeah, I wouldn't say the Raptors, like, stylistically are one of those iconic teams, but I will say, in terms of, like, team building and management, like, they are an exemplary team. And will be remembered by like management nerds, if that's a thing. And like the dunk donification of the world, I think will remember the Raptors very fondly for what they've done. So there's that.
Well, it might be like a Spurs type of thing where it's, you know, R.C. Buford and Popovich get so much of the credit for what happened there over 2 decades. Like,
yeah.
So maybe it's similar to that.
Yeah, that seems to be sort of the trajectory it's on. We'll see. Obviously, Kawhi sticking around has a lot to do with what happens, but. Yeah, you're probably right about 2021, 22, somewhere in there, but like far better than where they were before. And as of right now, like I can't think of 3 or 4 teams that would be, you know, that aren't looking at the Raptors and saying, damn, I wish we were that.
Yeah, I agree.
It's like the Celtics and Warriors probably right now, right?
Yeah, maybe you could argue the Bucks. And you could probably throw the Lakers in there just because the Lakers will always be the Lakers. And
yeah.
They can always hang their hat on, you know, being the utmost free agent destination and probably getting somebody to pair with LeBron this summer. So,
yeah.
But aside from that, yeah, they're. I think the Raptors are kind of like approaching almost like glamour franchise status.
It's so weird.
it's weird.
I still don't really know how to like put it all together in my brain. It's bizarre. Yeah. Well, we've gone for. An hour and 40 minutes.
It's a lot of ground to cover.
It was, but this was a good one. I'm going to get in so much trouble for posting this always one podcast, but hey, what the hell? It's a special, it's the 5-year Rudy Gay anniversary. So I think it was worth the extra time on the air. Joe, man, this was fantastic. As the last 5 years have been, it's been delightful. Also, underrated thing of the last 5 years, I think it's kind of led to there being a bazillion Raptors writers and bloggers and stuff who have kind of become a little more well-known and gotten to flex their muscles a little bit. And you are one of them. I'm one of them too, man. Like, I didn't start blogging until they were good. Like, I think that's an underrated thing too. There's lots of very good coverage of the Raptors in line with them becoming very good, I think.
Yes. And just like countless... Sad Boy Raptors blogs that have like really kind of exemplified this era for me. Like just the feeling of just sitting down and like being so despondent and like just getting all my feelings out in a column and like putting it all down on paper and feeling so much better when I was done.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful, man.
Yeah, man. It's nice to be a fan of a very good team. It rules. I'm a fan of your work. You're a very good writer. Thank you for coming on the show. Do you have anything you want to plug right now?
No, nothing in particular. I just, you know, I write a couple features a week at The Score, so you can always check out my work there. And follow me on Twitter at Joey_W. But yeah, nothing in particular to plug. Just grateful to be able to do this retrospective. It's been a lot of fun, man.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much for coming on, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. For Patreon subscribers, there will be a Patreon podcast coming out this weekend where I'm going to actually do like a top 10 ranking of the post-Rudy Gay trade moments. I'll have like audio and stuff to play. So stay tuned for that on the Patreon page, patreon.com/SeanWoodleyRaptors if you want to check that out. I'm also going to attempt to write a column for Raptors HQ for tomorrow about the last 5 years. Try to get some thoughts that were uttered today and some other ones into written form. Haven't been writing a ton lately, but hey, that's fine. I'll try to work those muscles tonight. What else is going on? That's about it. Subscribe, rate, review on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, all the places to get your podcasts. It's very, very helpful. And thanks to everyone for tuning in, and we will talk to you on Monday with another episode of Locked on Raptors.